And now, it's time for our weekly news round, Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
The Duke of Sussex shows in his memoir how deeply spiritual he is in relation to his memories of his mother Diana, Princess of Wales. But the powerful religious ties that permeated the life of his grandmother and his father are notably absent from the book Spare. In fact, the Duke reveals in his new autobiography that he is not religious, despite his family's historical and significantly close ties with the Church of England. Broaching the subject after recounting hunting and shooting a stag during his childhood in Balmoral, the family's Scottish home, the Duke wrote, "I wasn't religious, but this blood facial was to me baptismal." Blooding, he explained, is a ritual to initiate newcomers into the hunting ranks and a show of respect for the animal killed, writing that it is an act of communion by the slayer. He continues by revealing that conversely, King Charles, or Pa, was deeply religious, adding, "He prayed every night, but now in this moment, I too felt close to God." However, the Duke does not elaborate on the proximity he felt to religion while hunting as a young boy. The other mention of religion in the book relates to him getting spanked at school with the Bible. He said, "There was one particular teacher who, whenever he caught me, would give me a tremendous clout, always with a copy of the New English Bible, the hardback version. It is indeed, I always thought, a very hardback. Getting hit with it made me feel bad about myself, bad about the teacher, and bad about the Bible." Meanwhile, the book is littered with spiritual references, including speculating that some force in the universe was repeatedly blocking the king's wedding to the queen consort, and believing that an encounter with a leopard was a sign from his mother. Prince Harry even suggests that the universal force behind the wedding disruption might be his mother too. He wrote, "I couldn't help but think that some force in the universe, mummy, was blocking rather than blessing their union. Maybe the universe delays what it disapproves of." Describing his encounter with a leopard in Botswana, he said, "I was thinking about mummy. The leopard was clearly a sign from her, a messenger she'd sent to say, all is well and all will be well." Given the spiritual references in his memoir, it may come as a surprise that the Duke fails to mention the subject more, particularly given the royal family's well-known piety. Queen Elizabeth II's role as defender of the faith and supreme governor of the Church of England was one that she felt closely connected to. It was also an important aspect of her personal life. In June last year, she was presented with a special Canterbury Cross for her unstinting service to the Church of England over the last 70 years. The Archbishop of Canterbury gave the late Queen a small silver cross, inspired by a 9th century Saxon brooch, as a token of the Church's love, loyalty and affection to her. The Most Reverend Justin Welby said Elizabeth II's life was an example of a Christian life well led. She would often speak of the strength she drew from a Christian faith and would recite Christ's teachings as an example to herself and to the nation. In her 2016 Christmas address, which followed a year of political turmoil in Britain, she said, "Even with the inspiration of others, it's understandable that we sometimes think the world's problems are so big that we can do little to help. Christ's example helps me to see the value of doing small things with great love, whoever does them and whatever they themselves believe." King Charles, the new head of the Church of England, has described himself as a committed Anglican Christian who holds beliefs that have love at their very heart. Last September, he pledged to protect the multiple faiths of a diverse Britain no less diligently than Christianity, a nod to his long-standing work to promote interfaith dialogue. Addressing religious leaders during a reception at Buckingham Palace, the King promised to protect the space for faith itself and to uphold the numerous religions, cultures, traditions and beliefs to which our hearts and minds direct us as individuals. The Church of England's bishops have refused to back allowing priests to marry same-sex couples, keeping them at loggerheads with LGBTQ's community. The bishops met to finalise recommendations after 5 years of consultation and debate on the Church's position on sexuality, according to the BBC. The broadcaster said it spoke with several bishops present at the meeting, who said the church teaching that holy matrimony exists only between one man and one woman would not change nor be put to a vote at the General Synod next month. Same-sex marriage has been legal in England and Wales since 2013, but the church did not change its teaching when the law changed. The Church of England website states that while ministers cannot carry out or bless same-sex marriages, your local church is still there for you, with people being welcome there to pray or ask us to pray for you. The decision not to back the change ahead of the synod puts the church at odds with the Church of Scotland, which voted in May at its General Assembly to allow parish ministers and deacons to marry same-sex couples if they wish. In August, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, acknowledged that there are deep differences within the church, as he faced criticism for reaffirming a 1998 Anglican declaration rejecting same-sex marriage. The Church of England website states ministers cannot carry out or bless same-sex marriages. It says online, your local church is still there for you. Archbishop of Canterbury Welby acknowledged the deep differences. Comedian and television presenter Sandy Toksvig, who is gay, said the lives of LGBTQ people were at stake following the religious leader's horrible mistake in reaffirming a resolution which stated that marriage is between a man and a woman and that same-sex relationships are incompatible with Scripture. Mr. Welby responded by saying that the Anglican Communion, of which the Church of England is part, is a complicated group of churches with deep differences in many areas. But he told the Lambeth Conference, a meeting of Anglican bishops which took place this summer, that he could not and would not punish churches for conducting gay marriages. In November, the Bishop of Oxford became the most senior cleric to call for change when he said the church should allow same-sex marriage for both its congregation and its clergy. The Right Reverend Stephen Croft said he wanted to acknowledge the acute pain and distress of LGBTQ people in the life of the church. In a lengthy essay, the bishop said he was sorry that the church had been so slow to reach better decisions and practice on these matters and apologised for his own views being slow to change. But the bishop also said clergy must have the option not to opt in to any new arrangements, saying it should be recognised that it is a legitimate and honourable position for those who want to keep a traditional view of marriage and human sexuality. Australian Cardinal George Pell described Pope Francis' papacy as a disaster in a secret blog as he grew increasingly disillusioned with the pontiff in the years before his death. In some of the strongest language used by a Vatican critic of Pope Francis, Cardinal Pell said his decade-long papacy had become a catastrophe. Pell died at the age of 81 after complications from hip surgery. At one time, the third most senior figure in the Vatican, he was unmasked as the anonymous author Demos, who published his concerns and recommendations for whoever succeeds Pope Francis as the next pontiff on a Vatican blog called Settimo Cielo. He condemned what he called Pope Francis's weakened teaching of Christian doctrine and his openness on issues including homosexuality, women clergy, celibacy for priests, and the granting of communion to remarried divorcees. Pope Francis was intellectually inferior to his predecessors, John Paul II and Benedict XVI, he claimed. The cardinal also alleged that phone tapping is regularly practiced in the Vatican. The Australian prelate said that inefficiency and corruption over the last three decades have cost the Vatican at least 100 million euros, possibly even 200 million euros. Commentators of every school, if for different reasons, agree that this pontificate is a disaster in many or most respects, a catastrophe, Cardinal Pell wrote under the pseudonym. Pope Francis appointed Cardinal Pell as his finance minister and tasked him with rooting out corruption and inefficiency within the Holy See. But that job was interrupted when the Cardinal had to return to Australia to face accusations that he had sexually abused two altar boys while he was serving as Archbishop of Melbourne. He was convicted in 2018 and spent 13 months in jail, but was acquitted on appeal in 2020. After his release, he became increasingly critical of Pope Francis's attempts at reform. In a further attack on Pope Francis, Cardinal Pell wrote an article in the days before he died in which he described the pontiff's decision to canvass Catholics worldwide on grassroots issues like the role of women in the church as a toxic nightmare. Cardinal Pell wrote the article for The Spectator, which published it a day after he died in Rome. The revelation that a formerly close ally of Pope Francis had become one of his harshest critics comes at the end of a turbulent couple of weeks for the Vatican, in which Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI died. His personal secretary published a book that was critical of Francis, and the Holy See opened an investigation into the mysterious disappearance of the teenage daughter of a Vatican employee 40 years ago. A seaside town has been ordered to take down a statue of the Virgin Mary, a collateral victim of the battle between French secularism and radical Islam. The council in Flotin-Rey on Rey Island off the Atlantic coast has been given 6 months by the Bordeaux Appeal Court to remove the limestone statue from its 5-foot pedestal on the road junction into the town. The court said the statue broke a 1905 law on the separation of church and state that outlaws religious signs and emblems in any public place in France. For decades, the law was applied half-heartedly, and no one seemed to mind about the statue in Flotin-Rey. But the mood has changed in a heated debate over religion, prompted by immigration from French former colonies in Africa. Conservatives have demanded a strict application of the law to counter what they see as the growing influence of Islamist radicals. They have argued, for instance, that Muslim prayers in public places or the provision of halal meals in school canteens run counter to French secular values. Atheists have said that if secularism is to be implemented firmly with regard to Islam, the same should be true with regard to Catholicism. In Western France, Libre Pensée 17, a local secularist association, has filed lawsuits demanding the removal of several Christian statues. The Flotin-Rey statue was made in 1945 for a local family who wanted to give thanks after two of its members, a father and son, returned from a German prisoner of war camp. In 1983, the family donated it to the council, which put it on the street. 3 years ago, a 32-year-old man lost control of his car returning home on a Sunday evening and crashed into the statue. The council promised to restore it and make good on its pledge 6 months later. The publicity surrounding the restoration alerted Libre Pensée 17, however, which then began legal proceedings. And finally, Pastor Jamie hung a world map on the wall, gave his wife a dart and said, "We will go on holiday wherever the dart lands." Turns out they're spending 2 weeks behind the fridge.
My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.